while those bitter springs of Meroth are put to pains in awaiting pleasure, Jehovah brings down evil itself to the gate of Jerusalem. That's Micah chapter 1, verse 12, in the version of my own from 2003. That's our daily scripture for today, little children, from the book of Micah chapter 1, which is in possession of 7 chapters in all, the book of Micah, all of which I've translated also. So we will be apparently covering the whole book of Micah as we go through one day at a time in our daily scripture reading. And as we return to our study, we've completed the article, The Ark of Urartu. And at the end, there are some historical notes which are quite technical. There's a world map by Ptolemy. There's some interesting notes, and then there's a very technical discussion of the lunar eclipse let's see now. Is it more than one eclipse there? I think there were two eclipses, weren't there? Wait a minute. Yeah. Oh, yeah. There are two eclipses which confirmed the date of 1544 BCE. I write there instead of 1531, which moves everything back 13 years, and I use the date of 2128 from the particular date that I found, which at the time was on Wikipedia, for the Akkadian Empire, which is the end of the reign of Shark-Ali-Shari. 2128, I added 13 to get 2141, which turned out to be the date we have continued to assert as the beginning of the Empire of Assyria under the ruler known as Ninus, or as we've identified him, Gudea, also called Chedorlaomer in the Bible, Genesis chapter 14. But let's just think about, now meditate as we might, as we so, you know, choose or desire to, if we so desire, upon the article that we've studied, the Ark of Urartu. And I don't know if you got the sense that I could have researched a lot more, or whether you thought that I really exhausted all the possible research that I could have done there, but I can certainly say from my own viewpoint that there was a lot more research that I could have done. For example, there was the discovery of the animal dung that was petrified and found in the hold of the various compartments underneath what would have been the deck of the ark, which had been petrified and had slid down the mountain. An animal hair was found as well. There were a lot of things found that, and a lot of measurements made that really weren't discussed very much. And certainly a lot more research could have been done on every possible aspect of that discovery. But I hope that I gave an indication that there is certainly a high degree of certainty that for someone who really has looked into it, at least, that this vessel in its now petrified state does represent the Ark as known from the Bible as Noah's Ark. And, you know, even just the size of it alone being correct, and the fact that it was shaped like a boat, should prove it. And there's no way that they would build a boat as a rectangle, because it wouldn't survive the stresses of the waves of the you know, ocean as it was, even bigger than the oceans today, when the waters overwhelmed the earth, how would the any naval architect knows that's why a boat is curved, because it needs to deflect the force of these waves. They can't just strike directly against a rectangular shape. It wouldn't withstand the forces, and it wouldn't. It also wouldn't stay upright. It would tip over, right? So, I mean, the fact that it has the curves on it in the vertical direction as well as the other directions just served to strengthen the design of a vessel for ocean going, you know, or for traveling water and floating. But there were a lot of things we looked at. So now, today, we could do anything we want, and I've been looking ahead. You know, I'd love to look back at the article Green, but it was not, for the most part, discussing the chronology we now have, except at the very beginning, a summary is contained there. It's called the article Green, but it's also called Seventh Summer and the Writ of History by Rolf Ward Green, yours truly. But it's called Green, its subtitle. But that article, like I said, most of it doesn't have the true chronology that we later established as true. What we now believe is true is essentially still the same as what was given at the beginning there of that article Green. Oh yes, there's the wall relief there too. A remarkable wall relief at Beni Hassan. Oh, that was such an exciting thing to discover for me, but we'll talk about it at some point, hopefully, I mean, for sure, as long as we stay alive, you know, and healthy. But let's see what we're doing here. This is quite an article, the article Green. And it talks about a lot of interesting things, I'm sure, even though it's not chronologically accurate. Yeah, Demetrius, I think, is mentioned in this article and his chronology. The ancient Jewish... Just to sort of preview the article Green. No, Demetrius is not mentioned. Wait a minute. Yeah, there, I spelled it wrong, I guess. Here's Demetrius, the Jew, right? And he gave these dates for the birth of certain sons and descendants of Abraham. But the main ones we're interested in from Demetrius is when he talks about the sons of Jacob, when they were born. He talks about what month and what year. These are relative years, though. He doesn't give the absolute dates, because back in the days of the ancient historians and also of the ancient Bible characters, who are the patriarchs, for example, like Jacob and his sons, there were no calendars that could give an absolute date with regard to the arrival of Jesus, because Jesus hadn't arrived yet. So it's all relative dates that are measured relative to some other date, such as the date when Jacob went to live in Haran, or whatever he uses, whatever he does. He talks about the date when he went there, and then 7 years after that he married the two daughters of Laban. Jacob did. But anyway, that's in the article Green. We talk about some of these dates that we use with regard to Demetrius. Oh, he's so good. Look at this. Yeah, he talks about the 1360 years. Do we agree with that? Wait a minute. Until Jacob's coming into Egypt? Very close. 1360. He says, from the deluge until Jacob comes into Egypt. But we have 1914 BCE. Later on we establish as the date it's a mirror date to the World War that's called World War I, which is 1914. And that's BCE for the year when Jacob came into Egypt with his sons. Joseph, you know, which is also after the beginning of the famine, right? Which began in about 1916, I believe, BCE, right? Because it had been going 2 years. In 1923, there were 7 years of plenty from when Joseph became the second in command of Egypt, from 1923 to 1916, those 7 years. I'm getting sidetracked here, but I think we have time. But 1923 to 1916 were the 7 years of plenty. And then that was also foretold by the dream of the Pharaoh, right? That Jacob interpreted that dream. But as he said, interpretations belong to Jehovah or God, Jehovah being the name of God. So God was the one who interpreted the dream as being 7 years of plenty and 7 years of famine. And then Jacob, in the second year or third year of the famine, came into Egypt in 1914. And if we add the 1360 years that Demetrius says back to the deluge, we get 3274. How many generations were there from the deluge down to Abraham? I think there's something like 10, right? Something like that. I think that's right. And so, but anyway, so if we go beyond Abraham down to Isaac and Jacob, that's 12 generations. We'd have 6 more years we'd have to add. If we assume a half a year per generation that there is extra, since they only round everything off to one near to the nearest year, right? And we're assuming they're rounding it down to the nearest year, so we just, they're always saying, you know, in the such and such year of his life, so they're rounding it down. Therefore, we add on extra years, and so the 3274 is 8 years shy of 3282, which is our deluge. So that would imply 16 generations. But the fact that it's something like 12 generations or so is close enough. Like, this is a very accurate number that Demetrius has. But he also says 30, he also says for the number of years from Adam until Joseph's brothers came into Egypt, right? That would be even earlier than this. His brothers came into Egypt sometime around, let's consider, first of all, just 1914. But he says 3624 added to that to get back to Adam. And we know there's 22 generations, right? That's 11 years to add, half a year per generation that we assume is an underestimate. Add 11, we get 5549. We're only 1 year shy. And Joseph's brothers came into Egypt during the famine 1 year before their father came into Egypt. So that gives us another year to add. So 1915 they came in, which would have been in 1914 plus one. So we could just add one here, and we get 5550, which is exactly our date for Adam. This is how we did, partly, but that's not the only way we did it. We also did it using the generations given in the Septuagint for the births of each son, right? So it's all been calculated precisely with these adjustments, and it agrees with Demetrius, remarkably so, when we do those adjustments. So that article, Green, was sort of a pioneer article for that. But like I said, it's not up to date with the latest chronology. So we're going to move to our next article that we're going to study, hopefully now, is called, first of all, the name we're going to refer to it by is Joseph and On. Redemption of the Phoenix is a subtitle, but we could also just call it On for short. And the full title is The Horns of Amun-Re and the Day of Judgment. Joseph and On, Redemption of the Phoenix. And we see a picture at the top, such a brilliant opportunity to study this thing. I mean, we'll have to look back to these pictures possibly later so we can understand it better. But we've identified Osiris as Joseph. And he's a mythological character in the Egyptian mythology. We identify Osiris as Joseph Ne-Geb. What do we mean by that? I'm not sure what I meant by that. Born... This is interesting. Wasn't Osiris... Let's see. Horus was born to Osiris after Osiris died. That's right. Which is some kind of a miracle talked about in the mythology of Egypt, right? And that's why Osiris is like the god of the resurrection and so on also. But Jacob and Rachel, we identify. See, we identify Keb as Jacob because of the similarity of the sound of Keb and Jacob or Jacob. But we identify it for many other reasons too. That way that Jacob we say is Keb. And Rachel we say is Newt or Knight. And Keb and Knight, in this illustration, I put the subtitle or supertitle, superscript, or the title, Keb and Newt of On, Egypt. They lived in the city of On, which is also called Heliopolis by the Greeks. City of On, which was not as far north as Memphis, as I recall. I'm trying to think, but it was sort of in that, it was east of the Nile, it was in up north. Oh, I know, it's right where Cairo is, that's right, it's right in the location of modern-day Cairo, the city of Heliopolis. They found it in the archaeological, in the city of Cairo, they found the archaeological remains of this city. So we know where it is, and it's identified as the city of Keb and Newt, or Keb and Knight. We're going to talk about Keb and Knight and how we identify them as Jacob and Rachel in the article. It's going to be in there. And Poseidon we identify as Lord of On. No one else that I'd ever seen had translated the word Poseidon, and I couldn't find any translation for the word Poseidon, the name Poseidon. Eventually, I finally determined it meant the Lord of On. Lord of On, with the city of On being Heliopolis, now called Cairo, in a bigger version of it. But, I mean, the modern city of Cairo is situated over top of this old city of Heliopolis, or On. But Poseidon, the Lord of On, who would that be? Well, Joseph lived in On because he was the priest of On. So, and, of course, we would logically, deduce that possibly Joseph's father spent some time there too. That's why Keb and Newt are of that city, with Keb being Jacob and Newt being Rachel. But Poseidon is also identified as Joseph, the god of water and earth, because his trident, right? Poseidon, the symbol of his power, is the scepter, this trident. And the interesting thing about that is a trident is like a pitchfork. So even though he's the god of the ocean or the water, he's the god of water. But that's because there was a drought, we could say, right? We can deduce all this, having looked at it now. And the trident represents the pitchfork of harvest, because Joseph had to harvest all that grain and defeat the drought. So he was the lord of water, but also of earth. And, we're going to find out a lot of things about how we identify the biblical patriarchs, especially Joseph and Jacob, with the Greek gods and the Roman gods and all the names. And we're going to try and align it all and see if it makes any sense. And the goddess Newt in this beautiful, beautiful illustration here. You're going to see it here? It's just one illustration that was part of the title illustration. It shows that Newt is often portrayed as outstretched and in a protective way over all of these other people in her care, whoever they are, and that she's the goddess of night. The stars are up above. Well, hopefully we're going to find out what all that means, but it's a beautiful blue color, this illustration, with all these smaller illustrations, some of them contained in rectangles underneath her body, as it's outstretched over top. Her legs go up, and then her body goes over, and then her hands and head go down. And inside that compartment are all these people that she's protecting. Some of them are in boats, and there are also animals she's protecting there. But she's also got, it looks like they're animals. They could be gods of some sort. But there are also hieroglyphs of many different symbols below and to the right side of this illustration, below where she's standing and where her hands nearly touch on the other side. But let's go back again. Oh, look at that. Remember the chronology we had from the Great Pyramid and the old chronology, the old Chronicle of Egypt? That was what that was. We studied that. And we're now in the article, Joseph and On. And a very important symbol and god in the Egyptian mythology, in the Egyptian mythology, but also very important to history, is the Egyptian Bennu bird, which really corresponds to the phoenix bird. And that was, remember, the phoenix would return every 1,000 years, according to some versions, and to bury his father. Well, the phoenix cycle of the Sothic cycle was also about 1,000 years. It was 1,460 years, right? Of our calendar, I think it was 1461 of the Egyptian calendar, because their calendar was lacking a leap year, a leap day, right? It lacked that extra day, so after 1460 years, another day would occur, another year would occur after that number of, so a quarter of a day for each of 1460 years, you know, 1460 divided by 4 is 365. So it took 1460 years for the year to come around again precisely to a full year. But also that was the time when Sothis would rise again at the beginning of their calendar. So Joseph and On, the redemption of the phoenix now. Here's how we begin reading. Know that Trinity is false. Homosexuality is wrong, and adultery is a sin. Do I need to mention child abuse? Unbelievers are the only ones debating these things. Believers have no need to do that. In the publishing of the good news, some do it out of envy and rivalry. That means the publishing of the good news of Jesus. Some do it out of envy and rivalry, but the main thing is that the truth gets published for whatever reasons. There may not be any way to prove the truth, but there is every way to prove it. So it's not like we prove the truth by one way. We have to prove it by every way, because there's no way to prove it by just one way. It's not enough. That it can't be proven by just one thing. So even the last article, just because we study one article doesn't mean that we've proven the truth. It's not enough, right? Some see signs and wonders, but still do not believe. And when everyone believes, the preaching work ends and is replaced by a new system. They will all of them know me, says Jehovah. Those having a spirit of prediction are worthy of death. as are the druggers. And Jesus teaches us to love our enemies and to pray for those persecuting us. Sin is a big topic. That's why we have the Bible. The true chronology of the world as published in the writ of history and ruler of Egypt is a smaller topic. If you look at our articles from before, we have the article green, right? Which is the one we give in the reference to the current article that we're looking at now, own. This is another copy of it in a different tab. We've got reference to the article called green. We've also got the article Joseph, so if I click on that, we should be able to go there. That's the article called Ruler of Egypt, right? Joseph, Ruler of Egypt, and it's also called Prisoner of Dreams and Multiplier of Plenty. But it's basically called Joseph, right? So we've got Joseph, then we have Joseph and Own, and then before those, before both of those, we have the article called Green or the Writ of History. So the Writ of History and the Ruler of Egypt refer to Green and Joseph, those two articles respectively. Joseph is kind of small there, let's make it bigger. Joseph, ruler of Egypt, and also Joseph means Jehovah has added. And we're using up our time rather nicely here, but that's another article I would have loved to have studied, but I think we need to study the article Joseph and Own first. I think that's the best thing, because it gave a refinement to the chronology that was developed in Joseph, and it was an important refinement. So we're going to begin with the article called Own, and that's what we've just begun with right there. We can say truth is likewise a smaller topic than sin, as we continue reading in the article Own. There are no paragraph numbers in this article. Unless I add them, there are none. Truth is likewise, like I say, a smaller topic than sin, and it fills a book at least as big as the Bible. The relation of the Bennu bird to the true chronology is that the sacred Egyptian Bennu is connected in Egyptian religion to timekeeping. Wow. I mean, how much are we going to read today? I don't know. We can read a little more, I think. We have an illustration there of the Egyptian god Amun, and he was connected to the moon, as his name seems to imply too, but I don't believe he was the moon god himself, but his son was the moon god, I believe, something like that. But he's very closely connected to the moon. Now, the Hebrew word Ben means son, and the Egyptian word Bennu is B-N-N, which without vowels is variously rendered banana, because B-N-N, you know, we can add our vowels wherever we like, or Bennu, to give two ways to reconstruct the vowels which are absent from Egyptian as well as from ancient Hebrew writing. They're absent from the ancient Hebrew, as we've mentioned many times. Bennu is the Egyptian name for the phoenix, the bird which returns to Heliopolis once every 1,000 years to bury his father. That's an interesting thing, isn't it? Fascinating, because actually, there was a return to bury the father when Moses had to bring the bones of Joseph up back and bury them in Israel, right? So that there was something that happened there, and that was after 430 years, which probably was the origination why it was said that the Bennu bird returned every 500 years instead of 1,000, was because Israel was in Egypt for 430 years, which is closer to 500 than to 1,000. So that's an interesting thing. But they had to return and bury the bones of the father, right? It's the idea there. And Didn't they have to return it and bury the bones of Jacob, too? Heliopolis is the Greek name for the Egyptian city of On. Yeah, we mentioned that. Let's go back to Genesis, chapter 50, if we have time. This is where they brought the bones, right? I think Joseph had to bring the bones of his father, didn't he? And no, Joseph made the sons of Israel promise to return his bones, right, back to Israel again, to take them out of Egypt. That's Genesis 50 and 25. Take my bones up out of here, before he died at the age of 110 years old, Joseph. All of these dates, he died in 1843 BCE in our chronology. We know all the dates according to what we found in our chronology, right? I mean, we know those births and deaths and all that in our chronology based on the Greek Septuagint version of the Bible. Okay, so, and Joseph went up to bury his father too. See that? In verse 7, Genesis 50 and 7. So this burial, returning to bury your father, was not just in the Egyptian myth of the Bennu bird, or the phoenix bird, that is, but which is Greek, the phoenix bird, I believe that, but it's also in many cultures, right? There's versions of it, the Pong of the Chinese culture, all these different cultures that have the same idea of this bird, which represents the phoenix, or this bird that would return. It was a fiery bird, right? Would rise out of the ashes and return to bury its father, right? This is an amazing. So we're gonna be covering what this means, the mythology, and hopefully we'll get a real sense of what it means in real history, right? But I think that's all we can cover today. We're gonna start tomorrow with this discussion of the date of the Exodus, 1493 BCE, but that's really all we can do today from the article. Joseph and On. Redemption of the Phoenix. Today's new study article commencing now, today. And this is January 24th, 2025 of the Common Era. The time is 22:49. Hours, Canadian Eastern Time. We're late today. I'm Ward Green, and I love you very much. Thank you for listening and watching, and on my behalf, this is Sissy, and this is Star saying bye for now. You know what? I slept too long at one stretch with the dry air coming into my room from outside, and I got a sore throat, and I think I was contracting strep, and I've gargled, and taken quite a bit of vitamin C, and I think I'm reaching the point where I've beaten that infection again. But I've taken about 6 grams of vitamin C, and I'm going to continue to take it until I get bowel tolerance, you know, until I exceed that point. And also, I'm gargling all the time, too, to kill the strep with the xylitol gargle. That's it for today. Bye for now.